Hi, I'm Kim.
And I'm Tora.
And this is our podcast, Parenting Young Adults with Kim and Tora. Thank you so much for joining us today. So we have a guest coming on a little later, but in the meantime, we wanted to start talking about things of concern. And Tora, you were just mentioning something?
And I was mentioning that I have been in like a little back and forth with people on social media. And one particular lady on one of the sites I'm on, it was a video posted where a mother took her young children to a carnival. And I'm assuming the ride must have either malfunctioned or he was doing something to the ride. Did you see that one?
I saw that.
And he pushed her with her baby.
Hey, yeah. All the way came in and kicked his butt. I thought it was great.
So I was reading, you know, once I made the comment, I said, really, you know, just no regard for human life. And she said, I don't know how and why she said it, but she said, I would like to know what led up to this. And it angered me instantly.
It doesn't matter. Why is a big grown, big old, big dude, white man, pushing a black woman who did not put her hands on him?
Well, I watched the video millions of times.
All she did was say some words. Yeah. And it doesn't matter what led, and plus what they said led up to it was that he was using running the ride in a very erratic manner and people wanted to get off. So what led up to it was even worse. But I don't care what led up to it. Keep your hands to yourself.
And that was my point. But she said, and I said, you don't understand how, and I actually got this from Toni Morrison, where she was in an interview and the woman said to her, why don't you put black women in your books and your plays and movies? And she said, you don't even understand how racist that statement is. She didn't say racist.
Why don't you put white women?
Yeah, white women in her, I'm sorry, white women in her books and movies. And she said, you don't understand how basically privileged that is for you to say something like that. Like, what would make you think I should? You don't ask white directors and writers and authors, you don't ask them, why don't they put more black people in? So why would you?
Not even more. Why don't they put any? There's so many black, black shows and books and stuff that don't have any. Just think Friends. Just think Seinfeld. Just think Cheers. There's so many white shows as well as books, which I could start naming too, that don't have any black people in it. And nobody ever says, why don't you have black people in there?
No one. So when the person who was on my social media said, I would like to know what led up to it, I was basically saying to her, do you know how racist and that statement is? Because it doesn't matter what led up to it. It doesn't matter. You saw her get off the ride. That's all you needed to see. Her get off the ride, go up into his face and say, what in the world were you thinking about? My children, you could have endangered us. That doesn't need to be said. What, if he threw a soda off or dropped his toy off? What could have possibly happened that you need to know what his problem was? You just need to know that he's wrong. And then, of course, after going back and forth, she's like, I said I'm wrong. I said I... You know, but I'm just me asking, well, I said, you don't just stop and think about that for 1 minute. Doesn't matter if that was your child that was smacked to the ground by a big black man. Doesn't matter what you said or what you did before that. Doesn't matter. And it wasn't until I had to say that a million and one times before she gets it. Like, no, it doesn't matter what happened before that, because what we did see, it was wrong. Okay, well, then that's all you have to say. We don't have to keep doing this. You know,
if the black woman had put her hands on him, it still would have been wrong. But what made it especially wrong was that she never touched him. Mm-hmm. We have the right to say whatever we want. Say whatever you want back. But he just, they're treating us as if we're not humans. And when they see our skin color, it gives them license to just do anything.
And that's... I guess something we can also touch on when our guest comes, but I feel like we're even trained to disrespect our own now, because there's a officer who comes on CNN Barksdale and he literally, I wish he didn't even say it, but he said the shooting of the 16-year-old girl from the police training point of view, was justified. Because if she had stabbed the girl, people would have said, well, why did you stand there as a police officer and let it happen? My thing is this, it's so many other videos where there was not immediate murder or shooting. It's so many.
I actually looked some stuff up. I'm gonna wait till our guest comes on, because you know I don't watch this stuff. But I was like, I know this is happening. Let me find some actual evidence of it. And I looked some of it up. But the thing with the little girl is that people are acting like idiots to me, because the only options are not to stand there and watch her stab somebody or to shoot her dead. You are a trained police officer. You can do that swipe thing with your leg and take her down. You can tase her. You can shoot her.
With a stick.
You could shoot her in the knee and make her legs crumple. It's all kind of stuff you can do other than shoot her dead. And that
says police officers are trained to shoot center mass. This poor child was shot 4 times.
Police officers are trained to do what?
Shoot dead center mass.
Well, don't train them to do that anymore. That's not appropriate. That's not a safety officer. That's not what a safety officer should do. A police officer should be trained to disarm the suspect and to de-escalate the situation, not to shoot dead. So I don't even want anybody to be trying to do that as a safety officer. Right.
But what is the problem when it comes to us that is the first choice is to shoot someone and to kill them? Because there was also a young girl, the girl that she was in the altercation. I don't even know if she's a girl. She could be a woman. She looked like a woman to me.
Yeah, they said a woman came to her. One of the people that came to her house was a woman. But there's so many things flying back and forth that I'm not sure I know what the fact is. But
that woman was also in the way of the gunshots being fired. So my point was, you're so reckless and so eager to kill. You don't even care about the bystanders. You know, it's like, even when they shot the lady a couple weeks ago with her, or a man with his child in the back. I mean, well, the guy was hijacking a girl's car at the gas station, and she had her baby in the back seat. They shot her baby in the face because they were so, I need to kill this guy who she did not know this man. He ran to the gas station. He hopped in her car and he told her drive off, and she took her keys out and said, no, my baby's in the back. I'm not going anywhere with you. The police don't even say, get out of the car, put your hands up, nothing. They just immediately fire in the car and shoot her baby in the face. And my thing is this, you were so eager to kill this person who was a carjacker. Yes, he was wrong. We're gonna all agree with you, he was wrong. He was a carjacker. He whatever crime he committed before he was trying to carjack this lady's car, it's all wrong. But why are you so reckless when you see a woman in the car, you're shooting in the car with her in the car, you're shooting in the car with her baby and talking about you didn't know her baby? Of course you didn't know her. You didn't care.
It took a moment to figure out what the heck was going on.
You didn't.
I say the answer is 6 letters that I just wrote. R-A-C-I-S-M. It's called racism. That's what's going on. It's called racism. And when they see us, they think, I don't care if you stole a pack of gum. I don't care if you murdered 8 people. We shoot to kill. I don't care what you do. When I see you and I have any suspicion that you committed any crime from a misdemeanor to a major felony, I'm taking you out. And that's racism, because that's not what they do to white people. And that's not what we hire them to do. I hope he comes soon, because we're kind of sliding.
Right. And I have family members and I've been told that black people can't be racist because, you know, it's more institutionalized than it is about, you know, it's more of a whole package. It's not just the color of your skin. It is the color of your skin first, and then trickle down to not wanting the color of that person's skin to escalate in life. And so you set up institutions to make sure that never happens. So they were saying that we don't own anything. We don't own an airport and airplanes. We don't own, you know, corporations, the color blue, Tide, you know, Heinz. We weren't the Koch brothers. We don't own that. So it's hard for us to have a racism we can have prejudices. So I would say that I had family members who were very, very prejudiced. I mean, you better not date outside your race. You better only, you know, support Black-owned businesses. And, you know, I mean, I've had those.
Like us saying, if they can't use our brush, don't bring them here.
Exactly. And I've had family members who were dead on with that, and it never desensitized them. You know, it never made them want to kill anyone of another race. It never made them want to kill white folks. It never did, or Caucasians.
Because we're more humane. And you know, I used to fall for that crap that we're all the same. We're not all the same. We just are not all the same.
You don't feel that way? You don't feel that we are all the same?
We're not the same. Black people are more humane than them, than white people. White people are just brutal. And you can look at the history of the globe. They're not just brutal to Black folks. They go over to the Middle East. They go anywhere and kill people and destroy their civilization, bomb out all their buildings, leave their homeland a wreck so that they can, they never say this. It's always some fake thing that the Muslim did this or that somebody did that, but they're really just going over there to take their resources. White people are brutal to me. Now, the difficulty with that comes in distinguishing between individual white people and white people as a race. But to me, white people as a race are inhumane, very beast-like. I mean, I just, I don't really have a lot of good things to say to them, because all I have to do is look at history and see what they've done to everybody. They colonized India. They did the opioid drug wars in China to get those people addicted to opium. They are the worst, in my opinion.
What in China?
The opioid situation where they couldn't conquer them. They pushed all that opium into China to get them addicted to that.
I know that. Now that would be something I would be studying from here on out to try to.
White people are horrible, but individual white people, and that just doesn't really make a lot of sense, but individual white people I can deal with. I can have a level of affinity, even not romantically, but love them as a person. Individual people that prove themselves to be different from what their race as a whole is, because their race.
Muhammad Ali has his example of the snakes. If there are 5,000 snakes on the other side of the door, why should he let in the 1,000 that are good when the 5,000 are trying to kill him? I get that. I get that so much, you know, and it definitely stresses me out to think that we're in a world where I know so many sweet, kind, got your back.
I know you do.
And then you have this crowd over here that's so large, so many in there that are just horrible. And I know that the ones that I know hate those ones, dislike those ones, you know, hate them. And just, I mean, really, they wish that the world could just be rid of them, because they feel like, you know, if you could do this to somebody else, wow, you really don't even care. Like, they get it. And that's how, I think that's how we live as Black people. We live, if you could do this to your own and other people, we know what you can do to us. Mm-hmm. You know, we live by that rule. So I feel like as time goes on, once they, not, I pray to God there's no more George Floyd videos, but the more exposure of the, even the older videos.
So many murders since that one day. There have been at least two. There's been one in North Carolina, and there was the one in Ohio. Those are just since the verdict. They're on a roll. They're not stopping. That hasn't stopped anything. Today is the 22nd. Yeah, that hasn't stopped anything. There's probably some more that we don't even know about yet. They're just I don't know. Oh, he's here. Do you want to give his bio before he comes on, or while he's on?
I can do it while he's on, just to kill more time.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi. Welcome.
This is Kim. Can you hear us?
Yes. Oh, he's connected. He says he's connecting to audio now. He did not connect to audio.
Video. Collect a video.
No, he's got to connect to audio so that he can hear.
Okay.
Hi, welcome to Parenting Young Adults with Kim and Tora.
Hello. How you doing, Kim? What's going on, Tora?
Nice to meet you. First of all, I'm going to introduce you, but I wanted Kim to just tell you who she is. You know who I am. I'm your sister.
I'm your sister's co-host. I just am the co-host on the podcast. I am a parent. I have children that actually the same age as Mia and Victoria, and our kids actually went to school together in the same grades. So that's how we met. And your sister actually came up with a great idea for us to do this podcast.
Well, so, my name is Joe. My wife is Crystal. I got three daughters, Carmen, Joy, and Alicia. I just came from Joy's practice. Mm-hmm. Been married 25 years. I'm a retired Maryland State Trooper. I currently work for the city of Raleigh now. And I own my own mobile detailing business.
How old are your daughters, Joe?
My daughter's the oldest is 17, 14, and soon to be 15, and 13, soon to be 14.
Okay.
And tell them about Carmen. 11 months apart. Mention Carmen. And mention that where Carmen is headed.
Oh, yeah. Carmen is going to the University of North Carolina on an academic. She's going to be studying this in a STEM program.
Okay, Carmen is your 17-year-old. She's going to UNC Raleigh?
Chapel Hill.
Chapel Hill.
Yep,
and I will, in light of the nature of the conversation that we're going to have, I will say that I'm also an attorney of almost 30 years now. So, you know, that's probably going to play into what my viewpoint is, you know.
And she also has two North Carolinians in that down there also.
Both of my kids go to college down there.
Oh, yeah? Mm-hmm. What college?
NCCU and UNC Greensboro. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Not that far. Actually, we just left Greensboro last week for a basketball tournament, and we're going to Charlotte this week for one. This is tomorrow.
I left Greensboro last week, too. I went down there to visit them. And, you know, spend up some money on some good food and all that, which they enjoy. Tori, okay. You have a bio for him, or you feel that was sufficient?
He nailed it. Everything I was going to say, but I thought he was married 25 years in June. I must got my facts right.
Oh, you're right. It's 25 in June.
Oh, see, I know.
Same difference.
Same difference, right. June will be here in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. So, we have all these questions, we want to just dive right in. And of course, I enlightened you a little bit, but I kind of don't want to tell you everything because I like for everything to be raw, to get your emotions and everything. But if I'm speaking too fast, just give me a signal or something and I'll slow it down. Because I notice when it's three, it takes a minute before your voice can pick up on the audio. So just let me know. But the first one I wanted to just dive into, because you went to college also. He also went to Montgomery College and he played football and he was a phenomenon. And he loves football. He's a Redskin fan. So today I heard Brett Favre said that the person who killed George Floyd, and I'm just going to call him a person because he's not anything to me. He said he didn't think he meant it. He didn't think he really meant to kill this man. It pained me because he just dismissed all the brothers that he played with and are still playing, because that can happen to them. And he said he thinks that politics should not be a part of sports. And I want to get your input on how do you feel having a legend or supposedly a legend like Brett Favre say something like that? And what does it mean to you as a male, black male, and you have friends, family, and everyone who shares in this pain?
Sure. So Brett Favre, actually used to like him. Ever since he retired, he's kind of been saying some off-the-cuff stuff. A lot of non-support for the people that protected him, the people that caught his passes, the people that he handed the ball off to, a lot of people that made him a Hall of Famer. He kind of turned his back on a lot of their efforts and support since he left the game. Now, I don't know, is that because the community he went back home to, and he's around a majority of people that's like him now, because at the end of the day, he has to go back home. And he lives in Louisiana. So he's around, probably, he's probably not around a lot of people that he used to play with. So ever since he retired, he's been saying a lot of stuff that's against the Black Lives Movement and things like that. So, and I just think, you know, and a lot of people are dismissing him, just like, you know, a lot of football fans are now, especially African-American, even Caucasian white people that support the Black Lives Matter movement and all the racial injustices that's going on, have kind of turned their back on him. He's lost some endorsements because of it. But, you know, as long as he's safe at home, you know, in his little niche, I think that's who he's gearing those comments to.
And he's probably now having different conversations than he used to have in a more diverse circle. Now they're more uniform and, you know, we can only imagine what they might be saying when we're not around.
So that was part of the conversation Kim and I had before you came on. I said, we grew up with people who were pro-Black, Black people who were pro-Black, but it didn't desensitize them. It didn't make them hate white people or want to murder them. So when I see stuff like that, it makes me wonder, but you brought it to the forefront, how? Because you go back to a community that could be your foundation and it's racist, and then you engulf yourself. But I can't imagine me being like that. So it's hard for me to understand, why would you rather choose, instead of, are you against the odds? Do you not want to build up your community and say, hey, no, I work with these guys, I play with them. That's not how it is. We've been taught differently. Like, what makes you, because you, when I tell Kim, you and I were brought up where we hung around all nationalities, but mainly white people. And it's hard, and we, her and I, we love to go at this, but I only know the white people I know, and they all seem to be very good people. And you and I, Joe, have had this conversation about two people hanging off a cliff, and if you have to save a really good Black person, and a white person is just horrible, 9 times out of 10, the white person would save the horrible white person, instead of, you know, the quality and the goodness of this.
Ooh, yep.
So that always stayed with me.
The Black person saved, if there was a really horrible Black person and an upstanding, compassionate white person, who do you think a Black person would save?
We've had this conversation.
Okay. So what I would say is what's the background of that person? That Black person that has, you know, one person on one hand, one person on the other. And I think it's just
pretty much the background of the white person,
how they were raised in the community they grew up in. Because I know some Black people that would let me go. And then I know some white people that would let somebody else go. So I think it's just how they was raised, or that they went through. Did they go through anything? Did they see any, were they ever called the N-word before? I think from that point, I would say is how they were brought up, or how they were raised, or anything, any obstacles they went through first. That's what I would think.
So just so I'm clear, your answer is that who the Black person was saved depends on how they were brought up. Is that your answer for the white person too? Or are we thinking the white person, what is your answer for the white person?
Yeah, but what about the white person though? What about the white person? Why don't you need to know the background of the white person?
Because I instantly think they would just let us go. Because it's the same thing that I think that Brett Favre is going through.
Thank you.
They gotta go back home. Unfortunately, we would second guess ourselves. But they automatically would say, I'm sorry, you know, I got to go back home.
I just happen to think we're more humane than they are. I think that we're different. I don't think that all people are the same. I think that Blacks and whites are fundamentally different, but that's just my opinion.
And you know, and that's what I love about her. She's been raised pro-Black. She's been raised as you know, as a Black person should, which I didn't have that privilege to. I'm learning now. Like, you know how my kids are. None of them have ever been raised like that. I didn't know to teach them that. So they have to do trial and error, like I guess I have to, because of course my best friend is Caucasian, my son's best friend, my daughter's boyfriend, best friend, all of them. So we are doing the trial and error of being protective and pro-Black. And because I missed out on a lot, you know, our grandparents didn't mention race when we were growing up, which we were mainly raised by our grandparents, but they didn't have that say so, you know, they didn't teach us, they just taught us bad and good and bad people, which I love that about them. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like it debilitated me now because I still can't grasp that. How can you do this to a human? Because Kim was just saying before you came on, she doesn't buy that we are all the same. And I still feel like that we are all the same, but she's not. No, she completely.
But I do want to say that there was a period in my life where I had a white best friend, all that. But growing up, I was pro-Black. And then given everything that has transpired since that time, I have come back around to it. But what we want to ask you, Joe, in light of your law enforcement background, like, I don't even know what the question is. Like, what is going on here? And what should we be... Just what's going on? Why do you think we're seeing such a difference in the way police are treating Blacks versus the way they manage to treat whites who commit crimes?
And that's a great question. And I get asked that question a lot. And when you go to the academy, okay, everything is officer safety, you know, make it home at the end of the night. You know, I'd rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6. Officer safety, officer safety, officer safety. They beat that in you. And it's very important. You know, it is important to practice officer safety. And but now I see with so much, what I believe is just so much access to the internet and so much negativity on the news. You turn on the news, Black male arrested, Black male shot another Black male. And I think with all the access to the internet and what you can see, it's just they hyper vigilant and automatically see us as a threat. So, see Black people as a threat, mm-hmm. because of so much access to all the negativity or what they put out there about us. I believe that's adding to the situation. And it might have always been here. It's just that we see it more because of cell phones. Right. So it might have been worse at one time. Maybe it's going down, but it was never documented because of the cell phones and social media and what people can see. So, you know, we get it every day that cop shoots him, cop shoots her, but it might be going down, you know, and that's only because we don't know what happened before. We know the tragic things that happened with lynchings and stuff like that, but it was never as exposed as it is now. And also you add that with what they preaching in the academies with officer safety, you add those two things together, you know, Joe has to be the bad guy. You know, even when you go to the shooting range, unfortunately, the silhouette, this might add to one or two, the silhouette is Black. Mm-hmm. So you instantly see that as a negative thing, shoot the Blacks, you know, so shoot the target. So that could be, you know, that could add to it. I don't know, but, I think that's the reason. I think social media and cell phones is kind of like exposing a lot of the issues.
Now, let's take a little moment to recognize our sponsors.
Now back to the current episode.
And I don't mean to put
there's a meme on social media that I actually posted too that shows an older Black woman with some other Black people behind her. And the sign says, "Stop police killings." And it's from 55 years ago. So the point you made that for all we know, this could be decreasing. We're just seeing it more and it feels like it's increased. We don't really know that, you know?
Yep.
I'm sorry, Tori, you wanna say?
Well, I was saying I don't wanna put too much on you about this because I know that's unfair to you. It would be more, I guess, authentic if I said it in a group, with a group of Black men, but I wanna know from a Black officer's point of view, why don't you shoot the white kid to kill? Why is it that they shoot the Black kid, the Black person, the Black lady to kill? Like, all I see on my cell phone almost every day is we don't even get a chance to comply. How is it that you can show, not you, Joe, but the Black officers can show restraint when it comes to little Johnny, who's blonde and blue-eyed, but when it comes to little Tommy, Tamika, we can't, the whites can't restrain themselves enough to say, drop your weapon, put your hands up, lay down. You and I have had private conversations about policing, how black, you know, people you might have come in contact will be disrespectful. And you had to prove to, you know, the courts, like, no, he wasn't compliant, but he still went home to his family and you went home to yours. When that is being presented to me with a white officer, there is, well, he wasn't compliant, so I had to kill him. Why? What's the difference between you making sure the black and the white kid gets home versus the only the white kid gets to go home with this officer?
Okay, good question. Now, I can't speak for every individual's officer's mind, what they see or what they feel as a threat. Mm-hmm. Okay, I can't speak on that. Mm-hmm. But only thing I can say is that a lot that I hear over since 2002, what I hear is that a lot of the police officers are policing neighborhoods that they are not familiar with. I was in the military with a guy from Iowa, and I was the only black person he ever seen live, like face to face. And you're looking at 1996, he'd never seen a black person before. So if you take that person and you put him as a police officer, the only thing you see is negative, negative, negative. You know, he kills, they carry guns, they sell drugs. If you just see that image of what they use in Hollywood or what they use on the news, you automatically gonna fear for yourself once they put you out in the street. So that's, you know, I mean, and that's still just today. You know, some people haven't seen other people, except once they get into, you know, the military, law enforcement, or job. They just never, in a circle, they group, where they live, they never seen, they just see what they see on TV. And unfortunately, we just paint it as negative for so long on television. That's all you hear. So I don't know if that adds to it. And you're right, that is a problem. But just to defend the law enforcement, also is that police officers don't shoot to kill. They shoot to stop the threat.
Can't tell.
Unfortunately, they succumb to their injuries. They, you know, so they stop the threat. Mm-hmm. They don't intend to kill them. They might, some, and some do, I believe. Some probably just, you know, and that's what's on in the news now with Chauvin. But the training that most police officers receive, a majority, like 99% in the academy, is that you shoot to stop the threat. And unfortunately, they succumb to their injuries. And you shoot center mass, the biggest part of the body is the easiest target to shoot. Mm-hmm. And that's where most of your, that's where all your vital organs are, except one. But that's where most of your vital organs are. So it's kind of like you take that person that's fear for their life, mm-hmm. and you tell them to aim at a point where a majority of their vital organs are, and you have this situation that's going on now.
But isn't that a contradiction, though, that we're going to, because Tori and I were just discussing this, that, and I was saying they should only be trying to eliminate the threat and de-escalate the situation. But if you're taught to do that, but on the other hand, you're also taught to shoot center mass, which is what she said, there's an inherent contradiction, because you're being taught to shoot in a location that is likely to be fatal. But we're saying that we're teaching you to de-escalate. And those two things don't seem to go together to me.
Well, see, and the thing is, it's something that's called, and you probably noticed this, it's called the force continuum. So it's certain steps that you have to take as law enforcement before you even get to deadly force. Presence is the first, you being there, showing up is level one. Mm-hmm. Deadly force is the last one. It doesn't mean that you can't go and then you have, you know, hands on, then you have OC spray taser, you have stuff like that, defensive, you have all those different things in between that. And it doesn't say that you can't go from being present to deadly force. You can skip over, it's not certain steps you have to go to. So de-escalating sometimes doesn't always fit that scenario. And like what's going on now in the case in Ohio, it went from my presence being there to instantly deadly force. And I know y'all want to talk about that, but then, you know, the presence was there and then went instantly to deadly force. So sometimes de-escalation doesn't allow for the situation.
So
speaking from
So I did some research just so, because I don't watch the news. So otherwise I really wouldn't be able to contribute that much. So I looked some things up so that I could talk about this, because my position, and you know, I never hide it, is that this is really due to racism. It is racism with the white cops who are just intent on killing Black folks, or just don't care whether they kill Black people. Because I found a story that said a 21-year-old man stabbed a Hillsborough County Sheriff's deputy in the neck on Sunday. This was written on 10/12/2020. He got stabbed in the neck. And they were able to bring in the person that stabbed him. And they said that they ran after him while another deputy followed behind in a marked patrol cruiser. And then the one who was stabbed before the stabbing caught up to the perpetrator and it says used de-escalation techniques and asked him, "Why are you running, dude? Are you scared?" So white people get to have normal emotions. They get to be scared. They get to run when they're afraid. And then he said, "You know, I'm gonna have to put you in handcuffs." And that guy stabbed the deputy in the neck with a knife and ran away with the deputy following, yelling for him to stop. And the body camera video shows him pointing his gun towards the perpetrator and yelling into his radio that he was stabbed in the neck. But then he pulled out his taser and got close enough to the perpetrator to use it. And they were able to detain this person. So they know how to do that, even in a situation where somebody has a knife. They just don't know how to do it when a Black person has a knife. And what really makes this worse is the Black person this time was a teenager and a girl. And, you know, there's like no humanity there to me.
And I was just telling
Every situation is different. Just like every job, you got bad cops. Mm-hmm. And you know, I know more good cops than I ever met bad. You know, is a very honorable job. I would say 99% of the people I've met and or I've contacted over my career were good cops or good troopers. And you have bad seeds, and you have people that's afraid. In that situation that you're talking about, they just didn't, unfortunately, they didn't see that person as a threat. They still don't see that person.
After he got stabbed in the neck, even after the guy stabbed him in the neck, he had to go to the hospital.
Yep, they still didn't see him as a threat. They still didn't see him as a threat. You know, I don't know what the situation is. And it's probably, you know, like we said, with the Brett Favre thing, at the end of the day, you got to go back home. You know, I don't know if that plays a factor or not, but and that happens a lot. You know, it's a case where, you know, it was a cop that just jumped on a car and got hit in the head with a hammer
and
fell off. He still didn't use deadly force.
You know, those things happen a lot. Yeah.
So,
So what do we conclude when we realize that none of the white people are seen as a threat, whether they hit you in the head with a hammer, drag you along their car, stab you in the neck with a knife, gun down 8 or 10 people? They're never seen as a threat. But if a little girl has a knife, or a little boy has a fake gun, some people have nothing in their hands, but they're all seen as threats. And I'm gonna say that I have a lot of law enforcement officers in my family. If they see these podcasts, they're gonna have to feel however they feel, because I love them and I think they're good people. But the profession, I have a problem with them. And the last podcast I said, and I still mean, I'm not sure, I don't think we need police anymore in the Black community. If all you're gonna do is kill us, throw us to the ground, put your knee on our neck, shoot us in the chest, shoot us in the back while we're running away, I don't want that anymore, because we pay these people. I don't need it. I could do without it.
And the thing, Kim, is that you know, it's so much good and so many incidences where I see all different races, Black and white cops and Asian cops and you know, Hispanic cops respond to calls. But those things are not reported. You know what I mean? Finding the little
kid. I'm just going to ask that.
That's a good point.
Saving the little kid or the cat in the tree. Those things are not reported. What I think we need to do is start reporting all those good things that cops do.
I was just going to say that.
Something bad, it doesn't you know, it's like, okay, they did 100 good things. You know, this bad thing that happened, it overshadows that bad thing. And that's the problem. That's what social media, unfortunately, negativity sells. And it has been for a long time.
Yeah. Controversy sells.
Negativity sells. They're never going to show, you know, a cop finding a little girl lost in the woods and taking her home to her mother. They're not going to show that because nobody wants to hear that. They want to see, you know, the cop that shoots the unarmed Black kid because that sells. And ratings brings more money. Mm-hmm. So we need to start reporting the positive stuff that law enforcement do and the whole negative. And there's been a lot of negative stuff lately. I'm not defending, mm-hmm. you know, the things that some of these cops have done. There's, you know, the killings and the unarmed and stuff like that, unarmed Black males. I'm not defending, you know, those things are bad, but we need to start reporting some of the good stuff that cops do as well.
And I think, keeping it real, we also need to address that the majority of the negative things that cops do, at least as far as we're aware, seem to be all directed toward Black people. They can be, I sent you a post, Tori, was a 61, how old was she? A 61.
I thought she was 66.
66-year-old Black librarian who they grabbed out of the car by her locks and slammed her to the ground. So most of the negative adverse events involve Black people. And then we know, I mean, just from what they're showing, when white people are mass murderers, they're able to be taken in.
You're talking about Kyle Rittenhouse, how he was able to get a glass of water and walk up to him with AK? And mm-hmm. and he had just murdered 3 people. And then you have a 74-year-old woman who had her arm broken, her house evaded, and they didn't even feel the love of, because, you know, we protect our older women as far as like, we love grandma, we love big mama, but they didn't even see her as big mama, grandma 74. They grabbed her, they yoked her arm up, broke it. And everybody wants to say, well, she's gonna sue. But I take away, where's the dignity? You know, and I wanna know, the humanity, yeah.
Yep.
Dignity for her, but humanity for the world. But I wanna mm-hmm. know, and I'm not trying to change the subject or anything, but I wanna know, if you could change the police force, how could you do it? How could you start, if you were on a board where they say, okay, look, we made mistakes. It was infiltrated by the Ku Klux Klan or racism or whatever, if it was, but now we're tired of it too. It's not working for us, it's working against us. What would you be one of your first steps to try to change the narrative? I know media has to play a big part. We already know that. But what would you do?
Okay. One thing that the Maryland State Police did that I liked, and this is part one, is that we had in the academy, they had different groups. Okay. So it would say, for instance, 5 tables. At each one of those tables, they had somebody with a degree. They had somebody with prior law enforcement experience, somebody who just did a basic 9-to-5. And what that did was that kind of added the table as well rounded. If you needed help writing a report, you would ask the college student. You know, a basic 9-to-5, they probably have more life experiences. You would confide in that person. Somebody in law enforcement with a background or military, how to march, how to salute, you would talk to that person. Mm-hmm. So what they did was they made a diverse group at each table. So you actually, those 6 months, you went through that group. So what I would do kind of add on to piggyback onto that is.
Excuse me, you said diverse, meaning race too, or just economic background?
Yeah, so in each group, you had, you know, a college student, you had a white person, you had a Black person, you had somebody that was in the military.
Okay.
So everybody could actually fit in and you could ask questions to and throw stuff off, you know, questions to.
Okay.
But what I would do, like to answer your question is, I would hire people from different diverse areas and put them back into the community. So even if he's from Dallas, Texas, and he grew up in a low income area, mm-hmm. I would put him in my city and say in San Francisco, I would mm-hmm. put him in that same area because he's used to it. I wouldn't take the kid from Iowa and put him in an area that he's not accustomed to. I would put him in an area, in a suburban area where it's more, you know, people that he's used to, and put them there, let him police that area, let him police the people that he's accustomed to being around. I just wouldn't shove him down into, you know, any part of trailer park, a low income, whatever. I would put them in that area so that because they're comfortable, they know to talk, you know, they know stuff like, for instance, you know, say you have one group of people who just like sitting out on the porch, playing cards, mm-hmm. listening to music. in some cities, that's a violation. That's an ordinance violation. But if I go to that area, I'm like, who winning in spades? Because right. I'm a customer. Right. You know, right. I know what they're doing. It's not harmful. You know, right. I know what they're doing. Don't put somebody from Iowa who doesn't play spades, who don't listen to their music, who's not, you know, enjoying this Friday night with a couple cold beers. Yeah, they're breaking the ordinance. But, you know, he's not used to it. So he's instantly going to say, cut the music down, or when I come back, I'm going to lock you up, because he doesn't know about it. But me, I'm like, who got the most books? Okay. So, because I know that, I know what that's about. So that's what I would do. I would let people from their areas that they grew up police their areas when they come out of the cabin.
That's a really good idea, actually.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. So is there a want to need to be a police officer that you can do that? Or is it, we saying all of this, but there's nobody from down in our hood that wants to be a police officer. There's nobody from their hood that wants. So like, how do you recruit? I mean, I know the military does a hell of a job. I know that. Do you recruit the same way?
You have to get, and that's the problem. So with all the negativity that's going on now, it's mm-hmm. the jobs. Okay, so the problem that a lot of police departments are having now is hiring. Okay, with all the negativity, especially minorities, there's a lot of negativity in that that's going on. So a lot of minorities are not coming in. So what they see now is a lot of college graduates. Mm-hmm. I mean, I went to one academy and everybody in that academy out of 40 some people had degrees, because you guarantee you're gonna get a retirement in 20 to 30 years. Mm-hmm. And if you got a degree, you get paid more. And they come in, they get 5 years of experience, and then they go off to the FBI, stuff like that. Oh. So it's a lot of people that with college degrees is coming in. So it's not a lot of people like me who grew up in the hood that mm-hmm. want to become cops. Okay. So what I would do is get somebody that has that type of background and put them in recruiting and have them who can walk the walk and talk the talk and go out there and say, look, this is an honorable job. In 20 to 30 years, you can retire. You don't ever have to work again. You're still in your 40s or 50s, and have them talk that. Just the same, and that the military is doing that too. Yeah. You know, they're having people who grew up in the suburbs, recruiting the suburbs. Some people that grew up in the hood, they're recruiting the hood because they can walk the walk, talk the talk. They go to the games, you know, they know how to, or they might have went to school with some of the parents. Right. So that's one good thing that the military is doing. And I think, so, you know, law enforcement need to do better recruiting, far as going into more diverse areas or and recruiting.
Okay.
What about they shouldn't be? What about community safety officers who maybe don't have guns or have guns? And I mean, I just thought about this right before this podcast. Or maybe the gun is locked in a safe, or there's something you have to do in order to be able to get your gun out. I know we don't want them getting killed, but every situation just doesn't. It seems like they just shoot to kill. Every situation doesn't require that. And if you have to take a next level step in order to access your gun, maybe you will be more inclined to come up with a solution that will de-escalate and make you not need a gun. Or is that unrealistic?
Yeah, that's unrealistic, because it might not be you as the victim, as the cop, but say if you get called to a house and it's just a loud noise complaint, but then once you get there, you know, somebody's being attacked, being beat with a bat, and now you got to run to the safe, unlock the car, and by the time you come back, the person is now dead. All right. But you know, it's just come with training. Come with training, like you say, you know, if you can get there and de-escalate, or use a taser or whatever. And there's plenty of times I've been called to fights and I've talked people down. You know, I'm not, you know, one guy, and I'm gonna give you a true story. So I get a call in a bad neighborhood. I mean, this is like one of the worst places in North Carolina.
Let's take a short sponsor break. Now back to the current episode.
So we get a call. And I'm actually on training at this time. I mean, I've already been with the Maryland State Police, but you still got to go through training when you get to another department. So I had more experience than this guy. So we get out the car, we get a call that is domestic. The girl wants him out the house. She didn't want him in the house for the rest of the, you know, she found some stuff that she wasn't happy with. So we get there, he instantly put on his leather gloves. So in his mind, the guy, he's like, bring it. He's taking off his shirt. Y'all want to fight? Let's bring it.
To the police. Who's wearing the gloves?
The other officer.
Okay. Right?
It was a, oh. it was a Caucasian officer. So he puts on the gloves as though I'm ready to get down.
Okay.
So the guy sees this, he's taking off his shirt. Everybody's coming out the house now. And because they think something's ready to happen.
Okay.
So I, you know, I walked up to him. I said, look, man, I explained to him. I said, he said, this is my house. I don't got to go nowhere. I said, you're right. You don't have to go nowhere. This is your house. If you want her to leave, she can leave. But she has your daughter. You going to put her out the house? He said, no, man, but every time I come, everybody just want to fight. So I said, I called him over. I said, look, man, you got a free pass to get out and go drink some beers and with the fellas, you know? He said, man, you know what? You're right. She want me out. I'm just going to go hang out. I said, yeah, just go hang out with the guys. Cool down a little bit. So he instantly calmed down. He said, you know what, man? I like you. He gave me his ID. He said, run me. I don't have no warrants. I don't have nothing. Mm-hmm. I gave him his ID back. And he walked down the street and went and enjoyed his day. Nobody got arrested. Nobody got hurt. There was no fight. But when he saw those gloves, he was already in defense mode. Like, yeah. You know, but de-escalation and experience. I had more experience than him. I was able to, and I grew up in this area. So I saw what the crowd was bringing. And before everybody could egg him on, I was able to separate him from everybody and talk to him. So
do you go back to the police officer and correct him about the black gloves?
No, he knew. But based on everything that happened, he knew.
Our show is called Parenting Young Adults with Kim and Tora. So I always try to tie in something with parenting on top of all the stuff that we talk about. So being that you're sending my beautiful niece to North Carolina, and well, the university, and she's going to be a Tar Heel, how are you preparing her for the world she's about to enter? Because right now she's got a great mother who is a soul sister and an amazing educator and a father who is, you know, Papa Bear, because you're a girl dad. So you are the ultimate girl dad. So how are you going to send her out into this world without being like me, freaking out, driving to the colleges and flying out there every week?
I'm going to be driving her to... You know what? We talked about this a couple of days ago. Well, yesterday. We talk about it all the time. Me and Chris is like, this is our firstborn. She's going off to college. Luckily, that she's only about 45 minutes or an hour away.
Mm-hmm.
Because I honestly don't think that we could handle it.
Oh, okay.
With all our kids. It's right. You know, and I admire you and Antoine's strength. That, you know, you have, I mean, West Virginia's not that far, but right. The San Diego, I just, you know, our West Coast, you know, the strength that y'all have, I wouldn't be able to sleep. Like, I don't think I still will be able to sleep once she leaves.
Yeah.
I'm preparing her probably a little bit too much. Okay. You know, I'm just like, look, you know, don't park by anybody, you know, constantly look left to right, look around, walk around in circles, just walk in buildings, call. Mm-hmm. I'm like, when you go to college, I want you to call me when you go to class. So I don't know how we're going to do it. You know, we still got to talk to you and Twan about that, how y'all did it.
Stevie just told Kim when he was on the other day, he told Kim that I overprepared him. So I think I overprepared my kids, and I still do, and which I feel bad about sometimes. I really do, because they hang up on me now. They'll be like, all right, bye, Mom. And they just hang up on me. And because... they just say things that trigger me. Like Victoria's like, oh, I want some ramen noodles. I'm like, where you gonna go get them? Mom, my neighbor lives right, you know, right next door. I'm like, well, just keep me on FaceTime till you get the light. And Mia, she goes to get her lashes done in some place. And I'm like, whose house is this? Turn the camera around so I can see the house number. Mm-hmm. And I still do the same thing. It's not fun for me. It's not fun for them, but I don't know any other way. And like I told them, you knew, you know, in heaven when you chose me. So you knew how I was gonna be at this thing. I mean, I don't know how to be anything else.
Tour. I don't know how I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna be the same way, but I'd rather for them to be overprepared, you know what I mean, than underprepared.
And there are days where I'm like, they're fine.
Mm-hmm. I haven't heard just piggyback on that conversation and say, for those of us who are not law enforcement with no military background, given everything that's going on with Black people, and our kids obviously are all Black, what should we as parents be saying to our kids? We have sons, we have daughters. What should we be saying to them that would at least improve their chances of surviving an encounter with a police officer?
Great question, Kim. Don't listen a lot of people are getting a lot of advice from the social media. You know, it's very confrontational. You know, what do you want? What are you doing? You know, I don't have to show you this. There's a lot of stuff that different states and laws, you know, you may not have to show your identification unless you're being investigated for a crime. But some states, you got to have your ID on you. So it all depends on what state, but do not get your life lessons off the internet. And what I would do is I automatically know that Carmen's going to have a kit. She's going to have that, her license, her registration, her insurance, everything right above the visor.
That's where mine
hands
is
on the steering wheel, palms out when you get pulled over, wind down all your windows so they can see who's in the back. If it's nighttime, turn on the interior lights.
Yeah.
Sure, you don't reach out the car, because one thing some people do is they reach their hands out the car. But if you see that automatically as a cop, you're going to think gun. Have your hands on the steering wheel with your palms up. Let them see that. Don't move. Don't. And, you know, back when we were young, when I was young, you know, as soon as the cop pulls you over, you reach down to the glove box, you get it. But that's right now it's called a deferment movement. Cops think you're hiding something.
Called a what movement?
Huh?
It's called what kind of movement?
A deferment movement.
Okay.
So you're doing something that you weren't told to do. So from the back from a cop, and you see, you know, you're reaching down into the glove box or you're reaching for something. It looked like you're either hiding something, you're grabbing something, because it goes back to that officer safety thing. I'd rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6.
Okay.
So you have this cop that's, you know, officer safety, you know, first, and you doing all these type movements, deferment movements, you're reaching under the seat, look for stuff. Don't move until you told to, you know. And, you know, a lot of people say, oh, I'm not, you know, I don't want to sell out. It's not selling out. It's just you not moving until you're told to. The police officer asks for your ID. You don't know why he's asking. You could be speeding. And he needs to write you a citation or warning, you know. So that's what I would suggest. Do not move while you're in a vehicle until you're told to. Do not reach for anything. Don't try to put your seatbelt on if it's not on, because he's pulling, probably saw that you didn't have a seatbelt on already, you know. But to him, you're reaching over your shoulder and you're going down to your waistband.
So that's don't even take it off either. Don't take your seatbelt off either. Don't take your seatbelt off either.
Don't take your seatbelt off either. Because to him, it works the opposite way. You go from your waistband to, and you letting it go above your head.
Okay.
So it looks like you're aiming backwards.
Okay.
And the opposite way, putting it on, is that you're going from above your head. It looks like you might be hiding something down under the seat.
Okay.
Don't even move. Just put your palms up on the steering wheel. Let them see it. You know, you can wind down your windows and all that stuff prior to and turn your lights on and then show your hands.
I definitely did that and I do that. Okay.
So, you know, have everything ready. You know, put in a little Ziploc bag with your registration and insurance, and set it above the visor. So if he say, where's your license registration? It's above my head, by my visor.
Okay.
So we want to repeat those, because I actually wrote them down, because I think those are phenomenal tips. I just want to repeat them so everybody can hear them, and we're making sure we understood what you said. That is, if you're stopped, put your hands on the steering wheel with your palms up so that they can see your hands are empty. Roll all your windows down so they can see everyone in the vehicle. Make sure you have your registration and insurance in a Ziploc bag that should be kept in the visor above the driver's seat instead of in the glove box like we used to do all the time. And then don't move until you're told to move. Don't make any movements. Don't reach for anything. Don't do anything unless they tell you to move. And if your seatbelt is on, leave it on. If it's off, leave it off. Don't fool with that. Does that pretty much, and don't start talking a bunch of trash. I didn't do anything, all that too.
Yes.
Be respectful. You can always address it on the back end. Let's live to get to the back end.
To get to the back end, because we can de-escalate stuff too. As a passenger, we can de-escalate or escalate. You know, if you, you know, if a police officer gets to the car, and I did this, you know, as when I pulled people over, I base warnings and tickets based on how I was treated.
Mm-hmm.
And because we could do either or, I could give you a warning, verbal warning, a handwritten warning, or a ticket. And based on how, you know, if it's a brief, you know, if they're doing 100 and a 35, I mean, it's, but, you know, if it's right. if that line where I can make a good judgment call, I base it on how I was treated, you know, well, what the hell you want? What did I do? I didn't do nothing wrong. You know, why are you pulling me over? You know, then I would base it, you know, on that. This person, like, you know, officer, I know I was wrong. a trooper, I know I was wrong. I was speeding, I'm running a little late, and everything checks out, is a written warning, or, you know, just drive safe. So we can, as passengers, we can de-escalate and escalate how the police officer or the trooper respond to us also. So we have to do our job as drivers as well.
So what do you tell Carmen and her friends? They're just coming from a party, they're amped, they're laughing, they're talking about how much fun this, because you know that that's going to happen, even though I know you and Chris say she ain't going to no parties, but when she does go,
y'all didn't say that.
When she does go and they all in the car and they are like laughing, you know, like we did. Okay, what are you telling Carmen? The police pulls up behind you. He sees, you remember the thing you told me about when you've been drinking, the windows fog up and the steam goes on to it, because, you know, I remember everything you say. So, she hasn't been drinking because she's designated. She got Joe and Crystal as parents, so she hasn't been drinking. But her friends had a couple in them, and it's cool out, so their windows are getting foggy. What are you going to tell her now that the police are pulling up? They wind down the window, and he asks, "Have you been drinking? And what's the ordeal? Like, what can get her home with all the car packed with people? They just came from a party. They amped, and she might even have a couple of little, you know, off the cuff people in there that might be like, oh, what they messing with us for? What do you want her to tell them in the car?
For one, cops, a lot of cops take classes on how to, if somebody's being honest. It's certain things like your artery, your neck beats faster when you're nervous or you're lying about something. So cops look at necks to see if you're, your heart's beating fast, looking at your hands and stuff like that. Just be honest, 100% honest, because if he smells alcohol, he can test you.
Okay.
You know, automatically. If he smells alcohol, he doesn't know if it's coming from the passengers or not. So look, you know, my friends have been drinking. Mm-hmm. I have not been. I'm willing to take a test if you want me to.
Oh, okay.
And just automatically just say, look, I'll go ahead and take the test if you want me to, but my friends are drinking. I'm the designated driver. My license and registration is above my head over the visor. And then you go wait for any response after that. But be honest. You know, let your passengers know, like, look, don't move. The police are pulling us over. Show your palms, your hands up on your lap. Let them see, because they're not going to pass the passengers. So if you have people in the back seat, good police officers won't pass that area.
Oh, okay.
So they're going to ask a good police officer, a well-trained police officer, is going to tell the passenger, driver, pass your driver's license and your registration to the rear. And then the rear passenger passes it out the window. So because there's that danger area, you don't want to walk. That's why it's important to wind down that window. So he's not afraid of that back passenger, you know, shooting through the window. So, you know, it's going to take an effort for y'all to get out of that. Look, I haven't been drinking. You know, they have been. I'm the designated driver. If you want me to submit to a test, a breathalyzer, I will.
Okay.
And then you go from
there. So it's okay to say that. I mean, we got a lawyer and a police officer. It's okay to say, I'll submit to a breathalyzer, and you're doing that for what?
Well, I'm not recommending that, but I'm just nodding because it sounds good. But as a lawyer, I'm not recommending that. But I do think it makes sense to be honest and say, those people have been drinking, I haven't. That's how it's supposed to work. There's no crime with being in a car and being intoxicated. The crime is if you're driving while intoxicated. So you're doing exactly what you're supposed to do. You're the person who didn't drink. Now, I will reserve comment on the breathalyzer piece.
No, let's get into that. Let's get into it.
I don't recommend it, but you know, on the other
hand,
if you're not intoxicated, it sort of kind of doesn't matter if you take one or not. So I get that.
And he probably would, if somebody says that, 9 times out of 10, he probably like, why would somebody submit to a breathalyzer if they've been drinking?
Right.
It's just kind of doing a reverse psychology on the cop. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody's going to submit. Nobody's going to say, yeah, I murdered that person. You know, nobody's going to admit to something that they did wrong. It's just be like, okay, well, it looked like she might be, she hasn't had any drinks tonight. And the rest of them do look like they had something to drink. So it's just playing, just doing a reverse psychology on him. And as an attorney, I would like, no, don't submit to a breathalyzer as well. But as a cop's daughter, my daughter who's calling me, I would like, look, submit, tell him that you're willing to take a breathalyzer or, you know, you submit to any roadside sobriety test, anything like that, just to prove that you haven't been drinking.
And I think that maybe in light of the current circumstances and the everything that's going on, I wouldn't totally disagree with that. Just to de-escalate, put the police officer at ease so you can get your butt back in that car and drive on home.
Right.
You deal
right.
with it later. So that's reasonable.
One quick question and then I'm done asking. So it's late at night. You remember the police officer in Virginia that just got stopped? Not police officer, Army lieutenant.
Yes.
Okay. He wanted to go to a designated, and you've told me and Torsha to do this. I don't know if yes. you remember that. You always yes. told us, don't pull over on the side of the road, drive slow, put our hazards on, and drive to a designated lit place.
Yes.
And he did that. So mm-hmm. his parents or somebody along the way told him to do it. He did it for his safety, and it didn't yes. add up to him. What are we to do now?
It makes
one thing angry. That I told y'all to do. Mm-hmm. What's that?
It seems to make them angry that you mm-hmm. didn't just stop right there, but we all know that that's not safe. Mm-hmm.
And you're right. But one thing that I told you and Torsha to do mm-hmm. is something he didn't do is call 911 and let okay. them know, look, I am being followed. I want to pull over to a lit area. Okay. I just don't feel safe. That's one thing he didn't do. So it yeah, does to the police officer did look like he was not following directions, or he's right. hiding something, or is he eating drugs, or mm-hmm. is he trying, you know, something. As a you're cop, right. I'm like, why is this dude not stopping? But if my supervisor called me over the radio, are you following a black SUV? Mm-hmm. He's just going to pull over to the nearest gas station. He's just fearing for his safety.
He did
that's
say
one
that.
Thing he, that's one thing he didn't do.
My brother did tell us, and we did. We called him, or he either called the supervisor for us, but we did call the 911. And yeah, mm-hmm. if it was dark, you're right. So that's I did leave that
point.
Part out.
I mean, I don't know that most of us would even think to do that, but that's a good point.
You're right. Just slow down, put your hazards on, especially as females. I mean, anybody, because you have people out here that's driving in cars with lights on, and they pulling people over, and they assault. They assault females or rob people. So absolutely, I tell my wife, you know, mm-hmm. drive slow, put your hazards on, and call 911. For one thing, if they say, no, we don't have anybody pulling the SUV over, then you don't need to pull over and stop. That's also, you're letting the cop know that, look, I am a law-abiding citizen and I'm pulling over in a lit area. So it helps you out two ways.
Well, okay, that's some great advice. Thank you.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So the police already calling it in when they're pulling us over? Okay.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. They call it. And even if you dial 911 and you're out of that police officer jurisdiction, say you get the state police will call, well, where are you at? Well, I'm in, you know, Glen Burnie, Maryland. Okay. They're gonna call the Anne Arundel County Police Department and say, you know, we have a vehicle that's being followed by a police officer. Do you have anybody? Yeah, we do have somebody pulling somebody over on, you know, Route 97.
Okay.
Yeah, he's just gonna pull over to, or she's gonna pull over to a lit area. She is following the law, so it helps.
So still don't pull over even after it's confirmed that it's a legit police officer. Everybody knows I'm being pulled over. Still don't pull over on that. Still get to a well-lit area.
Absolutely. I would.
Okay.
But in today's crime, yeah. I mean, even not. I mean, 20 years ago, that was the thing to do.
Okay.
Is to pull over. If you don't feel safe for yourself, if you don't feel safe, pull mm-hmm. over to a lit area.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, wow. Thank you. We appreciate you joining us. I think that, you know, I probably still have some rogue opinions, but it was nice talking to you. And I think you did offer some really good advice that can help people who find themselves in that kind of situation, and some good advice for police departments to consider diversifying so that people are sensitized and put people in areas where they're familiar with the people. I think this was really helpful, and these kinds of conversations are maybe the ones we need to be having to address what's going on in this country.
Absolutely. Well, I definitely enjoyed it. Y'all, I would love to join anytime y'all would have me and, you know, discuss this. You know, I really do appreciate it. And anytime y'all want to have me back, I'm willing to come back.
Thank you.
Thank y'all.
All right.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Well, Tora, we've got 2 minutes left.
I am proud of him for coming on. I'm definitely gonna get his wife on because she has a couple of degrees, and one also is in healthcare. She's a nurse, and
she wants to talk to us about the old COVID shot.
Yeah, I want her to talk about that, and her opinion definitely I want on that. And also about, I've been hearing a lot that we aren't getting treated right in the medical field. Mm-hmm. You know, where you have to lie and tell them, you know, something else just so they can look for something else. If you say, oh, I woke up with a headache, I'm not feeling well, they'll say, well, were you drinking last night? Well, you can't even say you were drinking because they're going to say, oh, it's probably a hangover from that. But no, I want a CAT scan. Something's not right. It's different from my hangover. But yeah, that's something I want her to, you know, tap on because I've been hearing that lately.
I have been hearing that a lot too.
Yep.
And people have been saying, because people will tell me stuff because they don't watch that crap. And then they'll be like, well, did you hear? Or I know yep. you didn't hear, but this is what they're saying now. So I've been hearing that a lot of on the television that a lot of people are talking about it. And I recall a book called Medical Apartheid, which spoke about that as well.
Yes.
So yeah, we definitely start having some guests. I think it helps to have other points of view and enlighten us. He was very enlightening. He had a very sensible point of view. And I think that people who watch this will be helped by it for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that, once we get the broader audience and they hear the intellectual message we're trying to get across, and you know, we've got to entertain them too, but once they start hearing what we are trying to offer, I think that they'll take away a lot from what we're trying to do with our parenting, because it's not only parenting, but it gears to parenting, because you can't get to this place where we are without talking about stuff like this.
That's true. It's all relevant. It all kind of plays into what we tell our kids, what they do, and how they navigate the world. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, it was another good episode, and we thank everyone for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you on our next episode.
Thank you.